What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Martian and Ozzy podcast. This week, we are back to talk about the big UFC 299 pay-per-view going down this weekend. Headlined by Sugar Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Chito Vera in the rematch. 14-fight card, 2 5-round fights on the main card. Stacked main card, great prelims, just a overall fantastic pay-per-view. A lot of good betting spots and can't wait to break this down. Ozzy is back this week off a one-week hiatus. How we doing this week, my man?
Doing great. Married my two great friends. Beautiful ceremony down in Catalinas in Costa Rica. It was great. Really hot down there, like 95 degrees every day. Was able to not lose my passport, not bring any illicit, you know, materials over that might get me, you know, put in the slammer. And I'm back for this card. I wouldn't miss it for the world. Down in Miami. Like you said, one of the best fight cards top to bottom, I think, that they've put together. A lot of fights that are very, very interesting on paper. A lot of division relevancy for all of them. We got a newcomer in Michael Page. The fight card just has it all. It's got a few female, only one female fight, or two female fights, excuse me. But it's got everything. It's got everything. So I'm really looking forward to this one. I think, you know, it's palpable, or, you know, palpable the anticipation for it. And, you know, hopefully Miami shows out and they show the respect and love from last year. We got a knockout of the year last year with Izzy and Alex, and I feel that we could get some fight of the year contenders coming from this one. So looking forward to breaking it down, and you know, a lot of interesting underdogs for sure this card as well.
Yeah, good mix. Last week's card, you know, had a lot of big favorites. Wasn't too exciting to break that one down beforehand, but this card is just the total opposite. I mean, not even really much to talk about last week. Except for the Oliveira KO knockout of the year so far. It's going to be everyone else has their work cut out for them to top the knockout of the year, because that is definitely a front runner. And, you know, the rare time where a guy gets a fight of the night and the knockout of the night. So, pretty weak card last week, though. And, you know, let's just get right into this week, because we got a lot of fights to talk about and a lot of interesting fights to talk about. So let's get into the first one, a rematch between Sean O'Malley and Marlon Chito Vera. Odds for this one have O'Malley minus 275, Vera plus 235. Most of the action this week's been coming in on O'Malley, and I'm thinking this one's going to be an O'Malley decision. I think that just the speed and the output of O'Malley early on will get him off to an early lead. Marlon Vera's just always been a fighter that kind of takes the first round or two off, and especially in a 5-round fight. And I just don't think that Vera really is comfortable leading in fights. You know, I feel like he's never the one like setting the initial tempo of the fight. He kind of lets you bring it to him for a little bit, you know, let Dom Cruz take him down for a little bit, then start to heating up in the third or fourth round. So I think the first two rounds will be O'Malley here, just landing straight, his typical straight punches, pumping out volume, outboxing Vera. And then it's interesting to see whether Vera will be able to kick it into second gear and maybe make the fight competitive in the third, fourth, and fifth. I think inevitably he won't quite do enough, and it will be an O'Malley decision here. Maybe, you know, I would say 4-1, maybe 3-2. But Vera, you know, historically incredibly hard to finish. This guy's got a cinder block of a head. And, you know, O'Malley's, his punching power, I know he just knocked out Aljo, but a big difference in this fight is that last fight from O'Malley, he was on the back foot, he was being patient, he was watching the takedown, and he was waiting for that one big shot to land when Aljo entered in the pocket. This fight's going to be a lot different. He's not going to be on the back foot. He's going to be, you know, more of like the Chris Moutinho fight, where he's taking the front foot and just pumping out, you know, hundreds of straight punches, and I don't think that's going to knock Vera out. So I think Vera's tough enough to make it to a decision. And hopefully Vera can, you know, turn it up, make it interesting, mix in some takedowns, mix in his clinch offense. But I think that he will be out to like an early deficit here. So maybe look to live bet Vera after the second round. And maybe I'm taking some of those late Vera props. The only bet I have on the fight is like Vera 3-4-5. And, you know, hopefully he can turn it up and make it interesting. But I'm going O'Malley decision as the official pick. What about you here?
Love this fight. Love that they made it the main event down here in Miami. I think both guys, you know, have a great fanfare. And, you know, the original fight, so just to preface the fight, took place 3.5 years ago. And it was an interesting Vera. You know, he had you know, his entrance in the UFC off that Ultimate Fighter, had kind of like, you know, had got a few wins over lower level guys, maybe lost a few kind of when he stepped up, for example, against John Lineker and Douglas De Andrade. But then he ran off that win streak, and then they kind of, since like that Andre Ewell fight, he had like a 4 or 5 fight win streak. He's only fought really killers. And the Sean O'Malley fight was sandwiched in between that COVID fight early on against Song Yadong, which was, you know, I think a fight of the night, I think they might have got for that fight, where people, you know, I think really got to know Marlon Vera and kind of thought that, okay, Marlon Vera, like, he is top 15 level. And I just felt that that original fight was pretty interesting because you kind of saw it was in a smaller cage there. You saw O'Malley darting around, you know, a lot. But it was interesting to me in the fact that Cheeto was able to no-sell a lot of the strikes that Sean was throwing and kind of without really too much regard. And I was very curious if Sean was going to be able to keep up that frenetic, you know, style that he had and motion later on in the fight. So, you know, fast forward, right? Cheeto Vera, you know, a lot of his best performances came after that. He's never been finished. And, you know, finally he's getting this rematch where he kind of feels like how his career went, maybe that he didn't get as much of the shine that he should have gotten, you know, as far as O'Malley saying, hey, you know, that fight doesn't count. You know, that fight never happened. Like, I didn't really lose. But in this fight, you know, you're looking at kind of the odds, and I think you mentioned the knockout of Aljo. If you're looking at it, this fight for Cheeto to lose by knockout, so for O'Malley to hit the knockout, is actually favored more than it was against Aljamain Sterling, which I think is I think it's plus 220, 225, somewhere around there, which I would definitely like to be the book, you know, taking it on the other side. Just because O'Malley, you know, I do think potentially could he get a knockdown or something like that, you know, maybe early on. But I just think it's going to be so energy intensive to finish Cheeto Vera because he doesn't really show damage. He is very mobile. It's hard to hit him cleanly. You know, Corey Sandhagen definitely has commented on that, and I saw him mention that because he's good rolling with punches. He keeps a nice high guard. He is very defensively savvy. And then I think as the rounds go on, you know, that cardio and that kind of like long distance running and all those kinds of things that he does to prepare, I do think, you know, bodes well for him. And I really did like seeing how he performed in that Pedro Munhoz fight. You know, that third round was extremely impressive to me. You know, the amount of strikes that he was throwing there, the strike selection. And I think that he can do something similar here against O'Malley. So I think the most important thing, though, and why some people are hesitant, because Cheeto has in the past, you know, had, I think that the Corey Sandhagen fight is the one that stands out to me the most because he just didn't approach that fight optimally. And then when you look at it for a guy like Sean O'Malley, it really is an easy fight to look at and feel that you could replicate it in terms of the stand-up action and the way that Sandhagen moved on the feet and was able to avoid a lot of the exchanges that Cheeto wanted to go into. But I'm not sure if Sean will be super committed to that just because the fact that mentally that, you know, Cheeto does have that win over him, you know, that the fact that the taunting that Cheeto might do could affect Sean, could get in his head. You know, Sean's talking already about moving up to 145. I saw Tim Welch talking about his ankle sleeves or wraps were why his foot got hurt in the first fight. You know, all these kinds of things that I really don't like to hear. And, you know, I just feel that if you're looking at how Sean was this kind of similar-ish price against Pedro Munhoz, and we saw what Cheeto just did to Pedro, we know that the later rounds are where Cheeto does definitely kind of get stronger. We know that O'Malley has never been, correct me if I'm wrong, right, Martian? He's never been to the fourth or fifth round. Yeah, he's never been to the fourth or fifth round. He's won 4 decisions, right? But against, you know, Jan, where he was very, you could see he was extremely fatigued, right? It was a crazy fight, so he should have been, but he was very, very tired late in that fight. And then
third round was his best round, though.
It was his best round, but he was fatigued. He was definitely very tired there. The Andre Sukumta fight, the Tarion Ware fight, like, you know, these fights, he has encountered some difficulty in the third, in the later rounds, you know, I feel. And he hasn't really taken too much damage other than in the Petr Yan fight. So, you know, I'm actually going to pick Chito Vera to win this fight. I do think that the style of Chito Vera, the power that he's able to put on shots, and just being a little skeptical of the whole Sugar Sean, you know, movement in a title fight, just when you're kind of giving me a guy who I know is going to show up for the fight, I feel, and be able to, I don't know, I just feel that there is something about Chito Vera that is, you know, something that I have not had a great grasp on. And I don't want this last opportunity for in a matchup that I think is good for him, because I do think there are a lot of bad matchups for him at the top of the division, but a matchup that I don't think is the worst for him. You know, I don't want to miss this plus 230, plus 240 shot on him. I'm going to keep it small. I'm going to probably maybe work in a prop as well, because I do think it's more favored for him to finish. I think I'll have a mix of him, his money line, and maybe knockout. But I think that this fight is not going to be clean for Sean O'Malley. I think that it's going to be a tough fight. But I do think that Chito is very live here. I think it should be a tad bit closer. I would probably line it a little bit more at, you know, Chito like plus 180, 185, you know, in that neighborhood. And, you know, we've been getting a lot of new champions, right? So I'm gonna just ride with Chito to get this. Maybe we get an immediate rematch. Maybe we don't. But, you know, I definitely, even if Sean wins, I could definitely see it being a close fight enough where they have a third fight. Or even if Chito wins, like, they still have a third fight. So I don't think that this fight will be over, like, this rivalry will be over. But I just feel something about Chito Vera this week. So I'm going to go roll with him and lock in something at, you know, the plus, like, 235, 240 number.
So the Latinos in Miami, though, too, they got the bump there. You know, they're saying 40 out of 120 media members on this card are they traveled all the way from Ecuador. So it's a big deal for Vera. So it's a good fight. I'm looking forward to it. Co-main event time, lightweight division, Dustin the Diamond Poirier, Benoit St. Denis coming back as the favorite, minus 205 for BSD, Poirier plus 175. Give us your thoughts on this 5-round co-main event.
Another incredibly intriguing fight. Dustin Poirier, one of definitely the, especially amongst hardcores, but he's crossed over into the mainstream. You know, one of the most popular fighters in the UFC, one of the most tenured fighters. I think I saw a statistic, he's been ranked in the top 10 or something like that for like 8 years in a row. Only fighter that is the case for, or maybe top 15. I don't know, one of those things. But I love Dustin Poirier, and you know, I didn't love him when he choked out Michael Chandler. That was the only time I didn't love him. But other than that, you know, his fights are always dynamite. He, you know, he's the dog. He's well-rounded, although sometimes his takedown offense falters. But here he's, you know, facing a guy who people are talking him up like he's the boogeyman, right? A guy all gas, no brakes, you know, a head kicker, a great grappler, you know, former whatever it is, you know, British or French Navy SEAL, whatever they call him. But I'm so skeptical about Benoit St. Denis, and especially when you're going up against a guy in Dustin Poirier, who is an incredible southpaw boxer, who has amazing cardio, who always prepares for 5-round fights. If I'm correct, I think this will be, I just want to see consecutively, like, or like how many?
Oh, no, Mike Chandler was 3, but whatever.
Oh, okay, Mike Chandler was 3, but you know, Dustin Poirier is always preparing for 5. Dustin Poirier is preparing with Matheus Gamrot as well, right? That he's in his camp for this fight as well. So his last teammate who lost, or not last fight, but Thiago Moises, another guy who trains with him. So ATT's gotten a look at Benoit St. Denis, and I think they're coming in with a decent game plan. Now, the southpaw nature, I think, is going to be big here, because that does either take away or maybe suppress a little bit of that left head kick, although it's ironic that Dustin got put away with a head kick in his last fight. But I just feel that St. Denis never fought a great boxer. His hands, I would say, is probably the weakest part of his game. He even got hit a few times by Thiago because he keeps his chin in the air. And I feel that left high kick gets suppressed a little bit. So I think he's going to have to get it done by, you know, shooting those early takedowns, those early doubles. He's really, really strong. He has a big, wide, like kind of like wingspan. So I feel that he's going to be able to maybe shoot in double legs and get in on Dustin. But I think it's going to be all about Dustin biding that time early. You know, the over 1.5 has been getting buying his time, you know, something like that. Yeah, Biden, though. Yeah, I hate him. Just kidding. I'm voting for him. What was I saying?
Biding his time.
Buying his time. Because the over 1.5, I think, has been getting steady action here. You know, I saw that. I think it opened in like the minus like 180, 190 area. And I think it's ballooned up. I'm opening it right now just so I'm not speaking out of turn. It is, yeah, over 1.5 is in the minus 210, 220 range. I really like Dustin Poirier as this fight goes on later in the fight. Because, you know, I just feel that Benoit St. Denis, if you've seen those fights of his, he's finished them early in the second round. But I just feel that this guy will slow down. And I don't think that his wrestling is at, you know, an extreme level. Like his technical, we were just speaking before this about Umar Nurmagomedov, how great he is at snatching up those legs, how nicely he moves on the mat. I don't see that from Benoit. Benoit is more of a jiu-jitsu guy through and through. So I think his grappling transitions are good, but I feel that getting in on the legs, finishing the takedowns, you know, holding guys down, I'm not sure what level he is there. And when Dustin Poirier gets your timing, when he starts hitting the body, once he starts ripping those combinations, moving, being a moving target, I feel that Benoit, I'm not saying he's in a fold, he's in a break, but I feel that his style, it will potentially become more energy intensive. It's going to sap his tank more because he's not a guy who is, I think, goes to plan B. He's going to keep trying those techniques that I think are, you know, are difficult on the gas tank. And I just do not trust him in a prolonged fight against Dustin Poirier. So as this, you know, has gone up, I got in a little bit at the plus 180 number on Dustin. You know, I think it's holding around there. I understand people saying, hey, Benoit's going to finish this guy. He's going to submit him. I get it. But I just cannot, like, you know, ration with the fact that he's just going to blow through Dustin, hold him down, and be able to finish him easily. So I'm riding with Dustin Poirier. You know, I got some round props as well that I worked in, in addition to just his money line. But I just really like him to chip away at Benoit, stay safe, stay smart, not pull guillotines, and come out with this victory.
Not pulling guillotines, that's key here. Been a bad, bad tendency of Poirier throughout his career. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with most of the same sentiments here. Before the fight, I think you go like a little bit on Poirier, but then also just be waiting to add more live because I think Benoit's success is going to be front loaded here. Benoit only has won one fight out of round three in his career. He's only been out of round two twice. The one was against Zaleski. I don't really count that short notice fight. And then, you know, the one time he did was back in March of 2019, 5 years ago in his second pro fight. So not only has he never been the full 15 minutes, he's never even been scheduled for five rounds. And, you know, Dustin Poirier has been five rounds. I would guess like eight times he's been five rounds or some shit. He's been scheduled for five rounds probably 15 times at this point, but he's been the full five rounds so many times. And he's done really well in the fights that have gone five rounds. You know, look at the Dan Hooker fight. I mean, he took an absolute thrashing in the first and second rounds there, lost both those rounds, and he was still the fresher fighter putting it on Hooker and, you know, easily taking over in the third, fourth, and fifth there. So I think Dustin Poirier's chances, the longer the fight goes on, are really good. Definitely am worried about him getting out-wrestled early on here, but, you know, Ozzie mentioned that Benoit's hands are not that good. His defense is really reckless. I mean, this guy is just, you know, an all gas, no brakes type of fighter. He doesn't think about defense. He doesn't think about staying safe. He thinks, I'm going to throw as many strikes and shoot as many takedowns till my opponent wilts. Maybe this guy has, you know, Merab style cardio where he can just keep that up for as long as he wants till he breaks Poirier. But we haven't seen him keep that up beyond the second round. So I don't understand why you'd be relying on him to keep up that pace at past 67% in the betting line here. against a proven elite fighter in Dustin Poirier. So I'll be looking. Before the fight, you know, I'll be on Dustin Small, Dustin 345, and then just be ready to add even more, man. I mean, I would knock people for even going, you know, medium to big on Poirier before the fight, because if they're trading in these wild brawling exchanges that Benoit likes to have, would anybody be shocked if Poirier just clocks him clean in the first couple of rounds with that straight left hand? I mean, the difference in pocket boxing between these two is significant. So anytime the fight's in the feet, it favors Poirier. He just has to really, you know, be mindful of that takedown, not give up, you know, his back too much, not go to that guillotine too much. And, you know, I just think that, like you mentioned, Ozzy, this guy's trained with a lot of good offensive wrestlers. And if he, training with Mateusz Gamrot might be the best preparation possible for Benoit St. Denis, honestly. So hopefully Poirier's been paying attention to his defensive grappling and making good decisions in there. And hopefully he can pull it off as the dog here. That's going to take us to the welterweight division. Kevin Holland, Michael Venom Page making his UFC debut. I was going to say long awaited, but it's not really long awaited. I feel Michael MVP was like perfectly content with most people but being in Bellator. And I mean, I guess it's cool to have him here in the UFC. It's about 5 years too late to be really interesting. But this fight is fun. Kevin Holland minus 132, Michael Venom Page plus 112. I mean, I'm just Holland. I bet him minus 123. I believe he's the better overall mixed martial arts fighter, and I'm extremely confident that he's fought the better competition. I don't think that's even remotely up for discussion, that he's fought in the better competition. He's probably beaten the better guys as well. You know, a lot of the elite guys Kevin has fought, he did lose to, but he's also beat a lot of, like, you know, mid to upper tier guys like Tim Means, like Santiago Ponzinibbio, Cowboy Oliveira, Michael Chiesa, Jacare, Joaquin Buckley. I mean, Anthony Hernandez. All seven of those guys are better than Michael Venom Page's best win. Who is Page's best win? I mean, Jesus, this guy really has not beaten many good fighters in his entire career. Oh, they both beat Charlie Ontiveros. That's key. I guess the Douglas Lima decision was his best win in his career.
Fought Charlie Ontiveros?
Yes, sir. Back in the day, I'm gonna have to check that one out.
Wow.
2015. But yeah, I'm just going, not just keep it simple. Kevin Holland, better MMA fighter, fought the better competition. I could see it being a tepid, slow paced striking decision that Michael Venom Page could split, you know, eke out a decision in. But I mean, hopefully Kevin mixes in a fucking takedown, man. I mean, I know he's not going to do it as like a plan, but if the opportunity presents itself, they clinch up. I think Kevin's going to be like, dude, I could easily just body lock, trip takedown and work this guy from top position. So I think it should be either Kevin demolishing him on the ground, or it should be like a decision for either guy. But even if the fight stays completely standing and Michael Venom Page gets his ideal fight, I'm not confident that he even wins a decision at that rate. So Kevin Holland, minus 123 is a bet for me to win one unit. And I think he's honestly good under like minus 140.
Yeah, quite intriguing, you know, fight here. Sad that we didn't get it during Black History Month. But we get it down in Miami, and I like it on the main card. You know, Kevin Holland, he's a popular fighter, and I think this is a deserved spot for him. You know, it's kind of disappointing that third round that he had against Jack. But in this fight here, you know, my favorite bet on the fight is for it to go all three rounds. I think you could get that at like minus 150, 160, which I think is fair. And I was considering taking Holland, just because, you know, Page, he's so slithery, but I feel that Kevin, he's got I think he still has the reach advantage here, right? Am I correct? Or is it?
He has like an 81 inch reach or something.
He's got a big reach. But what I like about that is I just think that he's going to still be able to land leg kicks here against Michael Page. Like Michael Page, even when he's had like his range against a lot of guys like in Bellator, like we recall that knockout against Douglas Lima, where Douglas Lima has he's also like a big wide welterweight, and you know, even though he's outside and he kind of like is, you know, keeping his range, he's still able to land that kick. And I feel that Kevin is going to be able to do that. I feel that his leg kick game being a little weak was why he didn't beat Jack. I thought Jack was able to, you know, do well with his own leg kicks. So my thing with this fight is I don't really trust Kevin Holland to land a lot on MVP. And even if he does land on MVP, I feel that either MVP will get demotivated in terms of a lot of pocket exchanges, and we might get a little bit of a boring fight, or it just becomes a fight where maybe we'll see some clinching and Kevin will like throw some strikes and then clinch and then start, you know, busting up in there. But I'm going to mix in goes the distance over on the fight and a small little shot on Kevin by submission. Just because I feel even if he does land big on MVP, I feel that MVP is just going to be very, very hard to finish. You know, he's slithery. Even when he gets on the ground, he's got like those big ass hands and he's able to kind of like get wrist control and kind of cover up. And, you know, his jiu-jitsu game is not that bad, right? And even his wrestling is weak. But he doesn't really let you establish like crazy positions on him just because he is so unorthodox and karate-like and all that stuff, right? We saw that in the Logan Storley fight. So I really like the fight to go to decision. But if there's a finish, I kind of like that 7-1, 650. I think you could get somewhere around there on Holland by submission because we know he'll latch on to one. So I like both. He's got a bunch of submissions since he's got to UFC. He's very willing to counter grapple or grapple or opportunistically grapple. So I like that. But I think that should be a profitable way to approach the fight.
Yeah, and Holland no scorecards too. I see -174 on FanDuel. I mean, I just really don't. I mean, this guy is durable as hell, and a lot of MVP's KOs have been against total bums, and I really don't see Holland getting finished here. So I think the no scorecards is probably a good bet as well. That'll likely push. Another great fight in the main card in the welterweight division, Gilbert Burns, Jack Della Maddalena. Odds for this one have JDM as the favorite, -164. Burns coming back, +144. Your turn to start this one off.
Man, this one is a banger. You know, we got a very, very kind of like changing the guards kind of fight, right? The young prospect who hasn't really fought too many top 15, top 10 guys. And then a guy in Gilbert Burns who he's always said, hey, man, I'll fight anybody. Like anyone signs a contract, like I'm there. But, you know, give me hard fights. Give me difficult fights. You know, I'll fight my teammates, you know, if he needs to. He doesn't really want to do that. But, you know, it was interesting. You know, Jack, I've grown in respect for him, you know, especially his last few fights. You know, I see all like why people are so high on him, right? If you kind of, you know, see his like the combinations that he throws, like how he's like when he is in boxing range and he is uncorking these shots, like he does it like with so much enthusiasm. Like he, you know, that he's going to continue the combination, right? There's a lot of times when you're watching maybe some fighters and you wish that they would throw like they would add another strike to their combo or double up on something or change up the target, right? I'll always be watching and say, hey, why doesn't this guy throw a body shot in this combination? Why doesn't he go back up to the head, double up on the hook, things like that? And those are things that Jack does, you know, kind of as good as anybody really in the UFC. And Gilbert Burns, right? I don't think he's really declining. You know, I thought in the Masvidal fight, I thought that he did pretty well. I thought he had a good last round. He mixed up all his strikes to the head and to the body with his takedowns really well. I thought he was moving fluidly there as well. My only thing is how intently is he going to go for the takedowns? And then how safe is he in terms of if he does engage in like a clinch scenario or like shoot in on the legs, like on the break and how, when he's trying to circle away from Jack, does he get cornered? Does Jack, you know, command the center? And how much of these big strikes can Gilbert absorb and then potentially counter? Because I do like his counter game. You know, we saw Basil Hafez, your boy, counter and land on Jack a bit, but he just didn't have the confidence in his hands. He doesn't have that confidence in his knockout power to where he really, you know, knew, hey, this guy's gonna be right here and I'm throwing this hook and he's gonna go down. Gilbert Burns does know that he's got power in the hands. Gilbert Burns does knock out and knock down training partners, you know, in his training camps and in the UFC. So, you know, I kind of was looking at Gilbert Burns by knockout here. He's close to 10-1. And just with the thought that Jack is going to be uncorking shots, you know what he's going to give you, right? A lot of his exchanges look very similar, right? Like a lot of the punches that he was throwing at Basil Hafez, it was the same thing as when he was fighting Randy Brown, like the kind of shots that he throws as you're trying to circle away and things like that. But I just feel that the grappling IQ of Gilbert Burns is really high, and I feel that he knows how to set traps and things to do to get to the takedowns, get to these body locks, and he's just so strong in there, man. I feel that people really underrate the physicality of a guy like Gilbert Burns and how he's able to mix it up, and I think it is a whole different level of test, no pun intended, that Jack has encountered in the UFC. So I kind of like the fight to go under as well to give me a little coverage for Jack potentially landing that knockout shot. So under 2.5 at, you know, the -145 to 150 area, along with a ticket on Burns money line is a approach that I am liking, but as well that Burns by knockout, because I do feel it's live here and I do feel that Jack can be hit, and because he does encourage these boxing exchanges, and that number is just a bit disrespectful, I feel, to the power that Burns does carry. But I most likely will probably mostly end up on the Burns money line with the under as well mixed in. Won't be a huge position for me. I will be looking at this live as well, because I feel that, you know, this the fight can turn either way quickly. But I do like the number on Gilbert Burns at this point. You know, it's been steamed on the Jack direction, right? But I do feel that there is opportunity here on the Gilbert Burns side, but should be a very, very, very thrilling fight and one of my more anticipated ones on the whole fight card.
One quick point. I just saw a video of Kevin Holland and Michael Page giving each other a big hug and talking it out before the fight. So that's looking real good for the goes the distance there. And this fight, I'm aligned pretty much with your thinking. I'm not interested in taking the Burns KO, but I do think what you said makes sense. I mean, Jack is very content to just absolutely throw down in the pocket. And there was a lot of times in the Hafez fight where he could have stayed, you know, just maybe 6 inches further away and kept his punches long, kept like the jab and the straight punch long. And I don't think Hafez really would have been able to touch him. But he was right in the middle. He was throwing hooks. He was winging hooks to the body, to the head. I mean, he was just throwing down. And he got, you know, hit a few times there. Nothing really any, like, I don't think he was ever in any trouble. But the guy, he is a bit reckless at times. And in that fight, watching the takedowns of Hafez, I mean, he took down Jack a lot. Jack made a lot of really poor decision-making errors in the defensive grappling, especially when it came to when Hafez shot a single leg or a double leg and or a lot of single legs. And there was opportunities where Jack could, you know, go to the wizard, push down on the head. He could look to do a lot of different things. He could, you know, try to dig an underhook. Instead, he was going to the guillotine. He went for the guillotine to stop the takedowns 4 times in that fight and ended up on bottom 4 times, in the 3 times in the first round, once in the second round. And it just didn't seem like he was really learning his lesson mid-fight. He's like, after like the first time he went to the guillotine and got taken down, you would think that he would have the wherewithal to say, I'm not going to do that again. But he just kept doing it over and over. So I think that Jack is still a bit raw in terms of the defensive wrestling. But I do think that Basil Hafez is a better shot wrestler than Gilbert Burns. He has a more explosive takedown entry. And I think Burns' takedowns are a little bit more upper body correlated. I was seeing that a lot in the Magny fight, in the Wonderboy Thompson fight, and in the Masvidal fight, where he seems to be a little bit more content to get the body lock from the upper body and then look to, you know, either lift and slam you, lift and trip you. He can shoot lower level takedowns, but he's not the type of fighter to land open space shot takedowns, which is a little concerning because that's where Basil had most of his success. So I don't think the takedowns will come as easily as they did for Burns or for Hafez, but I do think that they will still have opportunities to land. And Burns' top game is obviously a lot better than Basil Hafez, where if Burns gets one takedown, that could be, I mean, Jack could be in grave danger of being submitted in just, you know, a few minutes. And I also was watching Burns' fight against Wonderboy, and I just was really impressed by his approach there. I mean, he knew the dangerous striker he was against. He stayed out of Wonderboy's range. He timed his takedowns well. some of his takedowns he didn't get right away. He had to push Wonderboy to the cage, and there was about a minute, 90 seconds of, you know, kind of jockeying for position. And then Burns figured it out, found a way to get the fight to the floor, and eventually did get his takedown. So he really worked his takedowns in well there. His timing was good. And he just approached the fight really smart. So I think that that's what he has to do here. Stay out of boxing range, time his entries, maybe get Jack pushed to the fence if he has to, and then get those takedowns. And then I just think he's going to keep Jack down a lot better than some of the opponents we've seen take Jack down, like Angelusa, like Basil did. And, you know, I think in that last fight against Holland, we kind of saw that Jack's knockout prowess might be a tad overrated. I think that, you know, you have to really, I mean, let's think about it, guys. He's finished all of his fights in round one, and the two fights that went out of round one in the UFC were both split decision wins for him. The Angelusa fight, when it went out of round one, he almost got arm triangled in the second round there. I will say about Jack, though, most impressive thing I saw in that Hafez fight, it was a high-paced fight. He got taken down. He was getting out-grappled. But his output, his cardio did not falter one bit. I mean, this guy was still fresh. He was still pumping out strikes. He was still cracking Hafez with punches late in that fight. And I mean, I don't think that so for instance, if he gets taken down in the first round or even two rounds here, I don't think it's over for Jack. I think he could still rally back late because he should definitely has the cardio advantage, has the output advantage, is the better boxer. So I think Jack's slight favorite here makes sense, maybe minus 130 to 150. But where it's at now, I think Burns is the side. I will be on Burns, and Burns' submission as well, I think, is worth a poke. But man, great fight there. Can't wait for that one. We're moving on to the last fight on the main card, which is the first fight on the main card in the bantamweight division. Peter Yang, Song Yadong. Odds for this one have Yan minus 118, Song minus 102. Two-way action coming in on this fight. Very competitive fight. I have Yang Song plus 130. I bet it over a month ago, and you know, I'm looking pretty good considering most of the action has come in on Song in the past couple weeks, because I do favor him in this fight by a little bit. I mean, I don't think either guy is past like 55% here, right? I mean, this is going to be a competitive striking fight. Both these guys are phenomenal strikers. Yan is on a bit of a skid lately, losing some of his fights in close fashion. The Murad fight was the only one, you know, he got blown out of the water. Song's been looking fantastic. Got his first main events, you know, dominated both those fights. Looked fantastic in the Ricky Simone fight, particularly. Chris Gutierrez fight, not really much of a fight there. That was more of a walk in the park for Song. But Yan's a slow starter, man. We've seen this guy drop round one tons of times. He just doesn't get going in round one. He's so used to fighting five rounds. And even after having close fights against, you know, like Jimmy Rivera and the Sean O'Malley, it just doesn't seem like he's adapted his style to get going in round one. And that's going to be a problem here in a three-round fight because Song Yadong starts fast. He has really fast, powerful hands. He's a really clean pocket boxer. He's really tough to take down. So I see this fight being predominantly striking. I don't really see a path for either guy taking each other down because they're both really tough to take down. And I just think that I got to favor the youth in Song Yadong, the guy who's on a bit, who has the momentum, definite momentum for Song Yadong here. And I just think that he's going to be landing the bigger punches in the eyes of the judges. I do envision this one going to the decision. And I think that Song being the more impactful puncher is going to edge him this decision here. While a lot of times, you know, Yan, I mean, even in the Aljo early rounds of both fights, in the O'Malley fight, in the Jimmy Rivera fight, there's a lot of close rounds that he, you know, sometimes he lost those rounds. Sometimes he did just enough to win. I just think Song is a more like emphatic round winner of the two. When he wins rounds, he wins them more clearly. And I'm going with Song to win a 29-28 decision here in a great fight.
Man, this one's a banger. You know, I think we were supposed to get this as the main event when Song instead fought Chris Gutierrez. That was a horrible fight. I fucking hate Chris Gutierrez. Chris Gutierrez, I think, is like, he's definitely on my top five least favorites. Like, one of my least favorite fighters I've ever seen in the UFC. And especially because he killed Frankie Edgar and retired him. But yeah, you know, that fight, I feel like people are kind of holding that against Song. But the fact is, man, that Cruz Gutierrez, he just likes to stay on the outside. He threatens to, like, kind of push kick you in the knees and stuff like that. And you really don't want to run into one of those. You know what I mean? But whenever Song was uncorking those strikes, you saw that the dude didn't want anything to do with that. And Song did what he needed to do to get the win. But I love that in his last two fights, he's gone five rounds. Right, he looked great in the Ricky Simon fight. You know, a lot of power shots, defended wrestling well, you know, kept his pace well. And I just think the experience and how the UFC has actually built this guy has been impressive. I've liked how it's gone. You know, I feel that the Corey Sandhagen fight, even when you're rewatching it, even when I saw it live, you know, I felt that Song did really well. I thought that potentially without that cut, it could have been, you know, a very close and even fight going into the later
round. If that was a three-round fight, Song would have won a split decision there, by the way.
There you go. You know, so I thought that he did really well, and it's just, I think it's really hard to look good against Song Yadong. You know, I thought Kyler Phillips did a good job in the way that he was moving and circling away and doing things like that, but I do feel, and funny enough, it's like 3 years to the day. It actually is 3 years to the day right now from that fight. So, but I feel that Song has really developed, and he's really put in a lot of good work, and fought to his strengths more, and he kind of knows what the weaknesses are and has shored those things up. But I like the leg kick defense that he showed against Chris Gutierrez. I think that'll be important here, the leg kick battle. You know, Merab actually did hurt Peter with his leg kicks, you know, in their fight, if you watch that one closely. But I as well am on the Song Yadong side. You know, it's not gonna be a big bet for me. I did take a little bit at, you know, a little bit of lower that +110, like +108 or something like that. But I just feel that the pocket boxing, I feel, between the two guys is going to be paramount. And the fact that Peter, he, even though his defense, right, he sometimes doesn't get hit big, he is okay with taking those shots on his guard. He is okay with sometimes letting the other guy lead a bit. And the fact that is that when he does decide to go, I feel that Song's defense and the speed that he has and the commitment that he has to countering after people throw shots at him, right? Remember that Alejandro Perez, you know, punch, right? Alejandro Perez throws a jab and Song pulls and rips him with a right cross. I think he's going to be able to make him pay, similar to how kind of O'Malley was trying. But I feel that because Song is so short and compact and similar to Peter, I feel that Peter really hasn't fought a guy who is small like him and very, very fast. Remember that Jose Aldo fight? Jose Aldo did okay in a few of those early rounds as well. And I think that Song is going to be able to replicate a lot of the things that people who have done well against Jan in the terms of individual rounds, that people are not kind of maybe interpreting is not the right word, but kind of like putting a lot of emphasis on, right? He's lost to the last three guys who we presume are going to be the last three guys to hold the belt, right? Aljamain, Sean O'Malley, and everybody thinks that Merab is going to hold the belt as well, right? But I've said it before, I can't let it cloud my judgment about like what these other guys have done since, right? We believe in Sean O'Malley, right? People believe in him. They think he's the best guy right now, right? We believe in Merab. We think that he's the best guy right now, right? But just because those guys are the best right now, or just because those guys, those performances that we've seen of them after they've beat Peter, like I can't say or like cut Peter a lot of slack for losing those fights, because we're projecting forward and we're projecting for the now. And the guy is 31. The guy did take a lot of damage, he hasn't really taken that much damage, but he has had a lot of great performances already in the bank. Is he going to have a career best performance, or is Song Yadong more likely to have the career best performance? I kind of feel that Song Yadong is the more likely one. So, you know, I'm not making it a huge bet, like I said, but I feel that a lot of the intangibles are on the side of Song Yadong, and he's been gaining on Peter by going five rounds, by the competition that he's been. He's been fighting tough guys too, right? Even though, you know, Ricky Simon and Chris Gutierrez aren't title holders, they're solid too. So I think he's been putting a lot of good work in, and I'm rolling with Song Yadong there on Saturday night in what should be a great fight. So, great, you know, I I'm going to invest a little bit. I'm going to take Song money line and a little bit on the decision line as well.
We're going to be moving on to the last fight on the prelims in the heavyweight division. Curtis Blaydes, Jarlton Almeida, odds for this one have, Jarlton -113, Blaydes -107, two-way action coming in on this fight. Your turn to start this one off.
Love this one. I love that we got a real heavyweight fight on this card as well. It's kind of like the thing that I feel like brings it all together, right? Because a little bit further down, we've got a great lightweight fight. We got the, you know, the middleweight fight between Mikal and Michelle. But don't I feel like this
Parisian, that's a great heavyweight fight too.
Yes, but I feel like this one is the one where it kind of ties the whole card really well together, because we have a classic fight between American D1 wrestler or D2, whatever the fuck Curtis Blaydes did, and Jailton Almeida, right? Jail time, which maybe we'll hear some people start calling him afterwards, hopefully after he submits this guy. But, you know, Jailton is just, he's just a really interesting guy, right? Because in jiu-jitsu, right, in jiu-jitsu tournaments and competitions, it's been common for, like a guy who's like 180, you know, 170, whatever. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go up to the heavyweight division because those guys are a little bit less skilled and I'll probably be able to win. And it's effective often. It is often effective. And now we're seeing Jailton, who used to fight Marcin at 185, right? And made it comfortable enough that he had a lot of fights at 185. It wasn't like it was one fight, two fights. He had a lot of fights at 185. Made a little pit stop at 205. Hell, made a pit stop at a catch weight of 220 against Anton Turkelage. But now he's, you know, at this heavyweight weight class, and I think the guy is a problem. I think he's legit. You know, the before this, his last fight, this fight was lined at like minus like 200 for Jailton, and in a five rounder, I believe. Right now we're at even money. And the thing that happened in between was that he didn't submit Derek Lewis, right? And everybody assumed he would. Well, I think it was like
minus 200, right? Like, I don't think
right. It would have got closer, but still, Jailton was the favorite. You know, Jailton was the favorite. And what happened? He didn't submit Curtis Blaydes. Everybody thought he should have submitted him. He probably should have. And everybody's off the train. But just Curtis Blaydes, man, he's always been highly touted. And I've liked him as well. But I just feel that in this fight, he's going to be walking on eggshells the whole time. Like, the thing that I think the people that back Curtis here are relying on is, hey, Jailton, you know, his hands aren't really that good. Curtis Blaydes going to be able to stuff takedowns. But you have to hope that Jailton, like, gets tired trying to take Curtis down. But there's going to be grappling in this fight. It's going to happen. Like, I just don't see a way that Curtis is able to just throw his hand. Like, the first strike, if I'm wrong, let me know, that he threw against Saab Aspinall was a leg kick. It's the first thing that he threw, or, like, the second strike that he threw. And I just feel that Jailton, dude, he is so fast at heavyweight. So fast. Like, this guy, I think, is going to be able to connect to Curtis Blaydes. I think he's going to be able to throw enough punches and get enough respect from Curtis that, you know, Curtis holds his hands really, really high, man. He really has never really had anybody at all try to take him down. You know, Volkov actually did take him down, right, later in the fight. But he's never really had someone try to take him down. He's not really amazing when he is on top. And I just feel at some point Jailton's going to get on top of him and he's going to be able to finish him. So I already invested a little bit at the, you know, even money, minus 102, 103 number. But I just think that Curtis is just being overrated here. You know, he has power. He's landed some big shots. But if we were realistically, has he had that much cage time recently? No. He got knocked out by Pavlovich. Didn't really try to take him down. He had that quick fight against Aspinall. And then he beat up freaking, what's his name, Chris Daukaus. But he really has not fought a guy like Jailton, a guy who has the jiu-jitsu, has the transitions. And I feel that Jailton still likely has some room to grow, right? Like, I feel that he, with the five-round experience, I think that's big. I always feel that that is huge. He kept trying to taking Derek Lewis down. No matter what happened, I feel that that's big. He leveled up, I think, from that. And I think he's going to win this fight. And I think he will be fighting on that May card in Brazil. So I'm rolling with Jailton by submission. It's like plus 300. I like the money line as well. I took both, but I just think that he's going to win this fight, man. This is one of the picks on the card that I feel the most comfortable and confident with. But it is, you know, it could bite me in the butt, but I'm not laying big juice, and I feel really good about it.
We got a head-to-head here because I'm going Razor Blaydes one more time with the American. You know, there were some good points brought up. There were, however, I think the difference, one thing you've been thinking about here is the strength of schedule difference, where Curtis, or every opponent that Almeida has fought, I believe Curtis Blaydes would beat. They only have one common opponent, Derek Lewis. Now, he did get knocked out by Blaydes, or he did get knocked out. But let's be real, Curtis does win that fight more often than not. And as some would say, Derek hit his win condition. But in his UFC career, he has fought and beaten a lot of good fighters. I mean, there are some performances that were, you know, convincing, you know, that I think Alistair Overeem was probably the best he's ever looked. I mean, destroyed Overeem in that fight. And I just think that I don't think he's ever lost on a pay-per-view either. Yeah, I think that he's undefeated on pay-per-views, which is an interesting thing going in here. He is 5-0.
He's a real pay-per-view fighter, right? Yeah.
He's selling tickets. Yeah, people are buying the pay-per-view just to witness our boy Curtis Blaydes. Now, I'm pretty confident that Blaydes is going to be the better boxer of the two. I don't think Jonathan's comfortable on the feet at all. And I think just one thing is predicated on this fight. Jonathan having success is predicated on him landing takedowns. And we just haven't seen Blaydes get taken down before. And considering the difference in experience, it's pretty easy to say that Blaydes is the better wrestler. Now, we haven't seen his defensive wrestling really tested. No one has really attempted to take him down. You know, you said, Volkov got him down once. I think that does make sense in a 25-minute fight. But, I mean, I think he landed 17 takedowns of his own in that fight. So, I just don't think there's any proof that Gilton is capable of taking down a big, legit heavyweight with an actual wrestling pedigree. That's not something he's ever done before. So, I see it hard for Gilton to get the fight in his realm when there's no reliable way to do so. And it's not like his takedowns are that great either. They're very reliant on exploding. And I just have questions about this guy's cardio as well. I feel like if he doesn't have a good round one here, I don't think Gilton is digging deep to get the takedowns in the second and third round. I don't think so. So I'm going Blaydes here. I did get a little bit of a worse price than what it is now, but actually I have no fucking clue what price I bet him at. It was minus one something. I'll let you know one sec, but I'm going Blaydes here. We got a head to head. So that's fun on this one. We're going down to the women's flyweight division next. Caitlin Chookagian taking on Macy Barber. Odds for this one have Barber minus 200. Chookagian coming back plus 170. Been a historic Chookagian supporter. She did take a long layoff about a year and a half after the Theroux loss. Was, you know, trying to get pregnant. Had some trouble with that, unfortunately for her. Now she's, you know, getting back to fighting. Sure, Chookagian, I believe, is the more technical fighter of the two. She's definitely the cleaner striker of the two. She's more experienced as well. However, I just have a nasty feeling about this fight, man. I just think that Barbara's going to, you know, find ways to win at key times of the fight. I mean, it's going to decision, guys. Let's be real. The fight's going to decision, and one woman has great luck with the judges. And, you know, Chookagian really has never been robbed. I don't think she's actually maybe gotten a little bit of favorable decision in the Ribas fight herself. But Barber has some fucking mythical decision powers. I mean, the Andrea Lee fight and the Miranda Maverick fight are fights that everybody scored against Barber. And the judges both had it for Barber. I mean, I just think for some reason the judges love her style because she's explosive. She tends to land, like, you know, big powerful strikes here and there. And I just think that these fucking moron judges are just going to value that, like, you know, big explosive one strike power rather than Chookagian's, you know, consistent, you know, leg kicks and jabs. And it's just, I feel when the two of them land, Barbara just lands more significantly. Now, that doesn't mean she's the side at minus 200. Obviously, Chookagian, I believe, is the betting side here. I don't know if I'll get around to a bet because I inevitably feel she's going to lose a decision that was on the table, that was there for her to win, that she possibly could have even or should have even won, but the Barbara is somehow going to get her hand raised. So, annoying fight, in my opinion. I really would have liked to see them give Chookagian an easier opponent for a bounce back. I mean, she just fought, you know, the number two woman in the division, had a long layoff, had some trouble in her personal life, and now they're giving her another tough matchup here. So I wish Chookagian the best, but I think she'll sadly lose the decision here.
It's Chookagian season once again. Northeast stand up. You know, we got the, she's had the layoff, right? She's looked good. She's looked fine against every level of fighter that she's ever fought. And now she's getting the least experienced girl ever. Whatever, dude. Now she's getting the least experienced girl she's ever fought. She has a reach advantage. She's the better boxer with her hands. Right, doesn't hit as hard, but the Chookagian, she's just tried and true. Once Chookagian actually gets her timing and starts uncorking the right hand, she's actually legit, right? Like, I feel like she has improved. Like, I was actually, even though I was bitter because I did bet on Rebus, I did think that Chookagian, and like, I think it was like the second round, she started looking good. She started letting go of the right hand, stepping in on her punches, mixing it up to the body. And I feel that she's just so experienced in there. She's just such a, she has so many rounds banked in the UFC, in her training, and she's just so smart. She does not give, let you get off easy offense on her, which I think was the was where Rebus messed up. I thought that Rebus was looking great in the first round, doing good, and then I forgot what happened, but she like rolled for like a leg lock in late in the first round, something where Macy Barber was able to kind of like get on top and like land some elbows, some punches, and bust her up. And I feel that she was probably concussed there after that, and she couldn't get anything going. But we've established that kind of Rebus is better at 115. And, you know, that fight was at 125. And I feel that, you know, Barber's getting a lot of credit for and from that. But Chookagian's a gritty girl too, man. She'll dig deep. She wins these decisions. And like I said, she's just not going to give Barber the easy offense. She's not going to, if Barber's getting off on these clinch strikes, Chookagian's not going to stay there. She's going to be like, all right, I'm done. I did my work here. I'm out of here. And getting back to the jab. Getting back to the circle and around. She's going to be quicker than Macy Barber. She's definitely thinner than Macy Barber, right? If you see Macy Barber, she's looking a little puffy, if I do say something. Like, she's talking about fighting Juliana Pena. So I don't know if how long she is for this 125 weight class, if you know what I mean. But I just feel that even jiu-jitsu-wise, you know, that Chookagian, she's a black belt, or maybe she's a brown belt. Who knows? John Donahue is super weird about his belts. He's super weird about his belts, dude. Chookagian is just way too legit to be plus one set. Like, this is the same number that we bet on, or was Andrea Lee like 220 or 210? I'm not sure.
She was bigger. Yeah.
She was a little bit bigger. But I just
like De La Rosa.
Exactly. I just can't pass it up at this number. Like, I think this is all predicated on how hard this girl Barber hits. But dude, Chookagian's tough. I think that this is the kind of girl that I want my money on. And I already bet her. I took it at plus 179, official bet, a little over a unit. And I feel comfortable and confident about it, because if it's the third round, Martian, if it's 1-1, you know that Chookagian might be able to get this decision in that third round, because I think she's going to be able to frustrate Barber, use her kicks, and just hopefully she's able to avoid some of the big strikes. But Chookagian's got good eyes, man. She moves well in there. And it's hard to look good against her. So this is a stiff test, I feel, for Macy Barber.
And also, some people bet the plus 3.5 early on. That was a good line. I think now it's been bet a good amount. Yeah, it's steamed all the way to minus 200. But this fight is favored to go to decision, obviously, pretty heavily, and minus 325 to go the distance. And she's never lost a fight by more than, you know, 3 points. She's got 29-28 by Fia Rote. She missed weight for that Fia Rote fight. I did not remember that. And then the other two losses to I and Carmouche, both split decision losses. So every time she's in a decision, it's always, you know, 2-1 or a split decision loss. I mean, so
I'm in on some Chookagian decision too. Plus, like it's like plus, yeah, that's insane, dude. I'm in on some of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have that as well. And, you know, hopefully Chookagian mixes in some fucking wrestling, man. Barber's takedown defense is shit. And, I mean, Chookagian has leaned on it in the past. She is married to a wrestling coach. She does have the better jiu-jitsu pedigree. So, I mean, shit. I mean, hopefully she'd use it. Next fight, lightweight fight, Mateusz Gamrot, Rafael Dos Anjos. Odds for this one, half Gamrot, minus 455. RDA plus 355. And yeah, I took some early Gamrot prices on this one. I mean, the line has moved a significant amount, so not too much to say about the current betting line. Obviously, I wouldn't touch Gamrot's money line where it's at. And all I just don't think I think the prices are pretty accurate in terms of props here. So I think I'm going to keep it short. I think Gamrot's going to do his thing, grind his way, land takedowns right up from the back, and just grind RDA out here by being the younger, fresher guy. RDA, legendary fighter, but I just think he's too far past his prime, too late into his career. He's bouncing back and forth between 170 and 155. I don't like that. And I just think the Luque fight, the last fight of his, was the all-time worst we've ever seen RDA. It's not like he looked physically bad. It was like his mental decision-making and his fight IQ looked bad, which is something we've really never seen from RDA before. So I'm going Gamrot decision, and I'll pass it to you.
Intriguing fight here, I would say, for me. You know, I initially was like, okay, definitely Gamrot opener, -210, -200 range. I really didn't expect to see a +350 next to Rafael Dos Anjos. And I'm going to try to be short here, but just say that, one, RDA, yes, he's been bouncing back and forth. The last fight didn't look good, but 2 years ago, he beat the brakes off of Renato Moicano. 2 years ago, he was kind of +170, 180 range against Fiziev. 2 years ago, he kind of, I mean, he just looked good. And the a fight that Gamrot lost is against Benil Dariush, who, southpaw, best friends with RDA, comes from the Black House, right? What's his name? Cordero. And the wrestling, where both these guys wrestled and developed their wrestling, is the same kind of, is the same guy. It's the same guy that Homolo Bahal, you know, did his wrestling with, Orlando Sanchez, a bunch of these guys. So there is links between kind of some of the, you know, people that Gamrot has struggled with and kind of RDA's background. Secondly, a lot of Gamrot's fights, he does not look a crazy huge favorite, right? Against Carlos Diego Ferreira, he's only -200 to, you know, 190. I was on him there, but a lot of people were feeling that Diego Ferreira was in that fight until he lost, right? And the Jalen Turner fight, the Fiziev fight, he just doesn't really blow these guys out of the water. So I do feel if RDA is able to keep a little bit of a more tepid pace, you know, control the pace early on in the first round, I do feel he is live to win this fight, because he needs to negate from Gamrot. He needs to follow the Benil Dariush plan and then make his strikes count a little bit more. So can he do that at, you know, his age of 39? I'm not sure, but I'm really sure that Gamrot's not going to pay off at a -500, you know, look, you know, that big of a favorite. So I'm more inclined to throw away a bit the Vicente Luque performance. Just because it was a little bit weird. It was kind of like they moved the fight back, I think. They had to reschedule it and stuff like that. And he is down with Craig Jones over there. There's no more USADA. Like, is he maybe on that TRT now? Is there some stuff going on? I'm not sure, but he did before say that he's not going back down to 155. So what changed? Is he making the weight easier? I don't know. But I feel that he's live in this fight. So I think I might take a dog shot here on RDA and then maybe try to drop a little small bet on Gamrot round three, because maybe like the pace, you know, does catch up to him and Gamrot's able to wear on him and get a finish late. And I love Matheus Gamrot, but paying 455, 430, you know, these numbers seems like a lot far gone for me, like way overblown. So I'm interested in this fight, but I just don't think that RDA should be a guy where he's this big of an underdog against most people in this lightweight division. So I'm going to have to take RDA here for something, for sure.
We're going to move on to the bantamweight division next. Pedro Munhoz taking on Kyler Phillips. Odds for this one have Phillips as the favorite, -204. Pedro Munhoz, +174 on the comeback. Man, what a bunch of legendary Brazilian fighters in this car, am I right?
Yep. You love this. Love this fight. Another grizzled, you know, veteran here in Pedro Munhoz, and in the fight with a guy like Kyler, who another guy been getting built up, has had some, you know, previous big wins. Right, we mentioned the Song Yadong fight that happened 3 years ago. But he still needs kind of like that name brand win, And Pedro Munhoz is a extremely tough out. We've been seeing a little bit of the action come in his way. He was in that plus 200 neighborhood. Now he's dipping right below that. But Pedro Munhoz, he's just very steady, man. I've had a lot of success betting on his fights. I've also, you know, I had Frankie, I had Pedro, then I flipped over to Pedro against Jimmy, then I had Pedro against Aldo, and then like his last like three fights, I predicted them all pretty well. The Cruz, Gutierrez, and Marlon Vera fight. So I've had a good read on this guy's fights overall, and I feel that he's very live in this fight. Pedro is very dynamic. He's got an interesting, weird little body type, right? He's got those little short, stubby arms, but he's kind of hard to get a hold of, to get a grasp of. Sometimes it's hard to kind of get his timing and all. But it's also hard for him to land big on guys a lot. But his chin is made of granite. He's really good at the leg kick game. He's got really good jiu-jitsu, and he's got a great guillotine and submission game. When you couple all those things, and we got a guy in Kyler Phillips who doesn't have the most cage time in the UFC, his conditioning has been a little suspect, right? Like that Haione Barcelos fight, without that knockdown, it's a really, 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 really close fight. Do I think that Kyler Phillips is a deserved favorite? Yes. I like Kyler Phillips. He's young. He's dynamic. Trains with Sean O'Malley. He's a Gemini. He's got a lot of check marks next to him. I like him a lot. But I do feel that this fight could be tough. I feel that this is a fight that we could be looking for a live price, because I feel that, you know, if Pedro is chopping at those legs, getting those leg kicks in, I feel a decision for him, win for him, could be live, especially after he saw his work rate be the faltering thing in his last fight. But this guy, Kyler Phillips, really just does not have the kind of work rate that Chito Vera does have. So I feel that he's a lot more live than this number tells, and I think the market agrees with it. So I'm going to find some kind of way now to work my way into a position on Pedro, whether it be some kind of prop, whether it be a same-game parlay, whether it be maybe a significant strike kind of a prop, because I do feel this fight will go later. And I feel that Kyler, I just feel that Kyler is going to get hit here. I feel that Kyler is not going to be as much on the bike here, because he's going to have to score. I feel that Pedro's going to be in pursuit a lot, and he's going to be cutting off Kyler with his experience and forcing him to fight him. So I like this fight. I like potentially Pedro to pick up a decision win here. But, you know, I find it hard to envision a way where Kyler's finishing Pedro or really dominating in a reasonable way where you could kind of like really feel good about the minus 210 to 20 number. So I'm gonna pick Pedro Munhoz to pick up a win.
Yeah, I definitely think that Pedro is the side here, but I'm kind of thinking this fight is a little bit similar to the Chookagian fight. And I'm just, you know, it's kind of a gay stance to take, but I'm just trying to be more selective with underdogs, especially on a pay-per-view card, as we know that the underdogs haven't been doing well on. But I just think that Phillips is going to, you know, eke out a decision here. It should be a competitive decision. I don't see either guy pulling away. I agree with a lot of your points you said about Phillips, not really being too emphatic of a fighter. I think even the Haione Barcelos fight, his last fight, you know, razor close fight. I think that he hurt Barcelos and briefly dropped him in the first round. Outside of that one moment, I think that was a Barcelos round, and Barcelos won the third round as well. And, you know, that really was just one moment away from being a Barcelos decision. Munhoz, historically insanely durable fighter, you know, and never been finished in his career. I don't see this being the one where he gets finished either. So I think Pedro, no scorecards. It's pick him minus 115 on Bet Online. Maybe look for that to pop up on DraftKings. DraftKings and Bet on FanDuel, they also have those lines. FanDuel doesn't have the props out yet, and I don't think DraftKings does either, but they should be dropping in the next, you know, 12 to 24 hours if I had to guess. And yeah, I mean, that's just about it for me. I mean, it is a closely matched fight, but Pedro, sometimes his output leaves a little bit to be desired. You know, I feel like this guy could be throwing more strikes in there, and I just think he's kind of on the wrong end of some decision luck as well. The Marlon Vera fight, a lot of people scored that fight round one, round two for Munoz, and he unanimously lost that fight. Frankie Edgar fight back in the day got robbed in that fight as well. And I just think in a fight where this one's probably going to decision, I think Phillips is going to get the nod, but I am not endorsing him at minus 200. I do think Munoz is the side, but I just think I got to be selective with the dogs on this one. And that's going to move us along to the light heavyweight division, or no, middleweight division, premier division. Michelle Pereira versus McCall Olachechuk. Michelle versus McCall, banger of a fight here. We got Michelle minus 145, McCall plus 125. It's McCall here. It's the Polish Marauder, the southpaw, the best southpaw that Poland's ever seen. And the fight's all about striking range, man. I don't think this fight's going to have much grappling. Michelle could mix in the wrestling, but definitely not going to be doing with it like a game plan to mix it in. And even if he gets the takedowns, it's not like Michelle has much of a coherent top game as well. So I don't think that's too reliable of a path, but it's going to be a striking war. And it's going to be, in my opinion, all about, you know, where the fight is taking place. McCall is going to be the one looking to pressure, get the fight into the pocket. And, you know, he actually, McCall, even though he's shorter and, you know, thought of as kind of a stubbier fighter, he has a 1-inch reach advantage here. So I think McCall is going to be wanting the pressure to get the fight into boxing range. Michelle is going to want to keep it long, use his distance, use that front kick. He always likes that front kick. But I just think that Michelle, when you put him on the back foot, he gets so much less effective. And I think that if McCall gets his ideal pressure going where he's walking forward, he's, you know, getting his fight into the pocket, I think that Michelle has a good chance of collapsing here, you know, getting zapped to the body with those straight left hands, getting hurt to the head as well. Michelle really hasn't fought at 185 versus anybody. He fought Petrosky, but that fight was, you know, a minute long. And even the fights before that, man, Chaos Williams, razor close decision. Nico Price, he lost a round there and then, you know, had a pretty blatant foul in the third round that helped him win that one. Andre Fiallo, he dropped the first round. Ponzinibbio was a split decision. When this guy is getting striking fights, he's not pulling away. He's not winning emphatically. And I think Michelle is just a different type of striker rather than those other guys. Those other guys are kind of content to give McCall or Michelle his ideal fight of, you know, giving him that kicking range. McCall is going to be pressuring until he either gets, you know, hurt with a shot and knocked out himself, or he's going to land the knockout blow on Michelle. So I just think Michelle is going to really fight for, oh no, fuck, man. Olachechuk is going to really fight for your money here. He's going to pressure, he's going to bring the boxing, and I think he's going to win the fight as the dog. My favorite underdog on the card, I got McCall here.
This fight's a total fucking banger. I totally did not see this fight. I didn't even think this fight never even entered my mind. I'm going to say right now, right? The old adage, Michael O hits people and they go down, bro. They just do. Like we saw it in the last fight. He tanked all of Chitty's shots. Didn't Chitty kick him in the head like once or twice? Like it was nuts, dude. It was crazy. It was crazy. Now I will say, you know, this guy, Michelle, you know, a lot of good strikes that he threw. You know, he throws, right? He knocked out Andre very easily. It was, you know, but he's going to be throwing flying. He's going to be using up his gas tank here. And he better knock out Michael O. Because people talk shit about Michael O. They'll say, hey, his conditioning is not that good, all these kinds of things. I don't think so. I think that the other guy is always kind of fatiguing just as much as Michael O is. And I just think that with the pressure style that he brings, with the fact that he's able to avoid a lot of strikes just by staying forward and throwing that unorthodox left hand, the angle that the left hand comes different. And if you look at Michelle's career, never really fought southpaws, definitely not in the UFC. I think he knocked out Andre Petrovsky, but Andre sucks. He's got no striking. Even against Diego Sanchez, like he wasn't really landing big strikes, and he throws slaps out there. His boxing is just not good. I do think like a flying knee or something like that, it could be live here because Michael does kind of like bend over a little bit at the hip sometimes. But I just think that herky jerky movement, those body strikes that he mixes up, you know, here and there, and, you know, how he's able to kind of blitz in is going to be kryptonite for Michelle. Michelle's going to have to be on the bike. He's going to be having to launch that front kick. But I just think he's going to slow down, man. I just really, really, really do. And I feel very good about Michael O at this plus 130 number. where Michel, I think he's going to have to use his clinch. He's going to have to do a lot of different things. But if you look back at his career, man, the Andre Fiallo fight, he drops the first round to Andre Fiallo. And we know Andre Fiallo is a horrible fighter, right, Martian? Like, he's a bum. He's horrible. And he lost the first round to him. And, you know, but, you know, Andre couldn't deal with the kicks at all. Even Santiago Ponzinibbio, Santiago just gave him too much room in there. And he was trying to leg kick him and do these kinds of things. I feel if he just bit down on his mouthpiece and threw some, you know, blistering, you know, strikes, more of them, he could have won that. But also, Santiago's kind of washed, dude. He's old. He is an old man. He had just lost that Jeff Neal fight. He had just had that war with Miguel Baeza, knocked out by Jing Liang. Michael, oh, he's young, dude. He's younger than Michel. He's just as big. I feel like people think of Michel now still, and they think he's going to be huge. Like, he's going to be more chiseled than Mikel, but Mikel's 6 foot, same reach, and he's a stud, dude. And I'm riding with him, dude. And so far, my biggest bet of the card.
Let's go. Nice collab there. And I said it already, but if McCall's going to losing this fight, I feel like he's just going to go. He's going to go for it. I mean, like, I that's why I like him. Even when that fight against Chitty didn't go his way, he's like, all right, cool. Let me just fucking put the pressure on this guy. And I broke him. That was an amazing fight. Next fight, light heavyweight division, Felipe Lins, Ion Cutelaba. Odds for this one have Cutelaba as the slight favorite, minus 125, Lins plus 105. I think we talked about this one a couple months back. It was canceled the day of, so go ahead and give us your thoughts again.
Yeah. And then the only thing I'll add, sorry about that last one, is, you know, maybe Michel by submission. Maybe could be a look for someone here, but anyway. On to this fight. Yeah, last time I picked Felipe Lins. I'm still picking Felipe Lins here at a, you know, plus 115, plus 110 area. I just don't think that Cutelaba is long for the UFC. I feel that the guy's a total front runner, folds the 10. If he's not able to implement his style early on, with that being said, that's throwing huge power strikes, getting in close to you, taking you down and throwing ground and pound. He's not good. He doesn't have good control. And you know, I just think that he's not good. So if I'm getting plus money fading him, I just feel that it's pretty good. I don't think that Felipe Lins has looked bad in the UFC. I think his last few performances have been okay. I think he'll calf kick here. He will use his jab, which is pretty good. He used to be a heavyweight. He's got solid power in his hands. And I thought his Maxine Grisham fight was his best performance yet. So I really like him in this fight still. And I'm going to just keep fading Ion Cutelaba, which it's been pretty fruitful.
Yeah, I do agree that Lins will win the fight, but I'm going to wait for the live bet here. I think I'll, before the fight, take Lins 2-3. But I think if Ion has any success in this fight, it's obviously going to be front loaded. And I think he will probably take Lins down just by being, you know, a young, explosive guy. I mean, Cutelaba is, I think, almost 8 or 9 years younger. Felipe doesn't have, you know, impenetrable takedown defense. And I think that Ion's just going to explode early, have his moment, and he's either going to finish Lins in the first round or he's going to get finished in the second or third round. I just think that's the way to go with all Cutelaba fights. And I'll just be looking at live bet Lins. I do think he's the side. I do think that, I mean, Cutelaba at 55%, when I think he can only win the fight in like 5 to 7 minutes, it's pretty hard to put him as the favorite. But I think he will start better and Lins's price will go up live. And then I'm going to enter in on Lins and take 2-3 before the fight. Simple betting angle for me, short and sweet. Moving on to the heavyweight division, Robles Despange taking on Josh Parisian. Odds for this one have Robles minus 330, Josh Parisian plus 270. So same angle. Just fucking wait for live. People who are betting Parisian before the fight. I mean, there's just no way that Parisian's going to come out in like the first like minute and just take him down, bro. Parisian fucking sucks. Like, this guy's skill is dog shit. His best skill is being tough and maybe having a little bit of cardio. But I mean, his cardio is not even that great. I mean, he went to split decision with Roque Martinez, man. I mean, this guy is just really not good at
a fight. That was a legendary fight.
If anybody thinks that Josh Parisian is good at a single skill in MMA, please let me know what it is. I mean, this guy's going to go through hell early. He's probably going to get fucking ripped to the head early, and he's either going to get knocked out or Robles is going to tire out and get, you know, taken over. But the thing about Parisian is, man, this guy, he doesn't land takedowns easily. I mean, look, Alan Badeau was teeing off on him, dropping him in the first round before Parisian survived it, took over late. I mean, in that fight, Parisian was favored. I fucking guarantee you he was the live underdog at some point there. So just wait a minute or two, see how Parisian's doing. He's either going to get killed in the first minute or two. And if Parisian's starting to clinch, you're thinking, oh, he's clinching, he's doing the right thing. Now it's time to live bet him. The price is not going to plummet on Parisian if he gets to the clinch here. So, I mean, I honestly think Robles is going to probably explode his face in the first couple of minutes. And this is just not the time to fade this guy.
Truly a crazy fight. You know, if you have a chance to look at, like the official UFC photos that they take of these guys. I mean, Robles looks like an absolute monster. He looks like a mix of Francis Ngannou and Yoel Romero, which is terrifying to think about. His legs are just crazy thick. Like, I don't know where they got this guy. But I think Robles, I mean, his last few fights have been insane. Like, there's no way I'm using Josh Parisian to freaking fade this guy. And I mean, that's it. I'm just really intrigued to see what this dude is going to do. I think Travis Brown elbows KO is super live, but I always think that's live. Like that's you as a grappler. That's like my biggest fear, like in the world, like getting hit with those. Like I used to have nightmares of getting my head just freaking caved in with those kinds of elbows. But I think there's going to be a kick to the noggin of one Josh Parisian, and this fight will be over shortly after. If it doesn't happen, I don't really care, though.
This guy looks like a beefy Phil Halls. This picture, he looks exactly like Phil Halls. I know I can't be saying that, but Black History Month is over, so I think I can get away with it. But enough about that one. Flyweight division next. CJ Vergara, Asu Almabayev, odds for this one. Almabayev minus 575, Vergara plus 425. Go ahead and start this one off.
CJ is a horrible anti-grappler. I think grappling happens. This guy, how do you pronounce his name?
Asu Almabayev.
This guy, Asu, I think is a very intentional grappler. I feel that, you know, CJ Vergara kind of sometimes goes with the flow. And he's like, oh, whatever, you know, go do this. Like, I'm going to get away and I'm going to, you know, just start beating you up. But it's not going to work. I think he's going to get submitted. He's been in the card in like a rear naked choke in like every fight that he's ever had. So I think that'll happen again. And yeah, I mean, I just think Asu is in good shape as well. I don't see him slowing down too much. I just feel he'll be in control. Probably use a lot of kicks on the outside early on, but I see him finishing this fight at some point, probably round two submission. It'll be my pick.
Yeah. I mean, plus money on Almabayev submission, I think is worth it, man. I mean, CJ just can't stop putting himself in bad positions. And, he's certainly going to be worse for wear early on here. Same shit as I was just saying. Vergara is going to, him winning this fight is predicated on Almabayev having early success, slowing down, and Vergara taking over later. So just fucking wait to live bet him. I mean, but I'm going Almabayev sub at any plus money that is good with me. Probably going to be a rear naked choke. And last fight on the card, first fight on the card, women's flyweight division, Joanne Calderwood, a.k.a. Wood, taking on Marion Moroz. Odds for this one have Moroz minus 220, Calderwood plus 185. I'm not calling Caitlin Sarmanara, okay, because Sarmanara and Chukagian are two different. But at least Wood had the wherewithal to just, like, shorten her last name from Calderwood to Wood. So I can call her Wood. But, yeah, I mean, Moroz, this is a rematch, first of all. Did you know that, Ozzy? They fought before. Back in 2015, Moroz armbarred her in 90 seconds. And Wood just looked like an old lady in the past few of her fights. I mean, she's 38 years old. Holy shit. That is just never bet on a 38-year-old woman. I mean, Moroz, 32, no, she's not, you know, fresh as a daisy. And she actually looked really pathetic in that loss to Karina Silva in her last one. But, I think she's she's so much stronger than Wood. She's so much stronger than Wood. And I think she's going to eventually tie her up in the clinch, take her down, and probably out-grapple her, maybe even submit her again. And, you know, Wood winning the fight is, you know, predicated on her keeping the fight standing and outstriking, landing those little bullshit strikes of hers. She just doesn't hit hard. She's old. She can't really push a pace. And I think that, you know, one takedown and Moreau should be in pretty safe condition here. So no more thoughts on the fight for me.
Yeah, I don't have too many thoughts on this other than just I like that Moreau's, she kind of mixes it up a little bit and things like that. But, you know, she's been a little bit more favored, right? I remember we got Jenny Maya at a really solid price, maybe like plus 130 area, maybe a little more against Moreau's. Moreau's is an ATT fighter as well. I just think that she is more likely to have been maintaining her level overall than Wood has. And Wood has just had a lot of really like underwhelming performance, like just a lot of underwhelming performances, kind of lets girls stick around, lets girls go into their main domain. But I will say, I don't think either girl has a huge advantage in kind of like, even though, what's her name, Moreau submitted her, I don't think either girl has a huge advantage in any particular aspect other than maybe that strength and what you're saying and things like that. But, I mean, Calderwood or Wood at this price is not the worst bet. Like, we are never taking Moreau's here. So, by, you know, process elimination, I think being on both female underdogs this week, I think it will be a profitable endeavor. So, I would steer any followers, listeners, anyone like that to just let's lean into that. Let's hope that, you know, Wood is able to use her clinch and stuff like that and knees and things like that to win this fight, but might not happen. But if it stays on the feet, I think it Wood is a good bet. So I might end up with a little bet on her.
Interesting.
You don't think so? If it stays on the feet, come on.
If it stays on the feet, but you also might as well just do decision too. Plus 325.
The thing is that what's her name? You know, Moreau's has taken down a few girls, but I don't know. She just. That how she got submitted by Karine Silva, I was like,
that was bad. But you know, Wood doesn't look very committed.
She doesn't look very. I mean, I know Wood is trying to retire, but Moreau's doesn't seem very committed either to me.
Yeah. And all right, that's enough about that one. FMK, I already got mine ready for you.
Fire away, please.
All almost virtually identical prices. And they're all dogs. So I'm going to give you Pedro Munhoz plus 174, Dustin the Diamond Poirier plus 175, Caitlin tied for the most decision wins in UFC history, Chookagian plus 170.
FMK, those three. So Pedro, Dustin, and Caitlin. Okay, so I think this is easy. I'm going to fuck Dustin Poirier, five round fight. You're giving me five rounds of Dustin. You're giving me like the same price as the Frivola fight. I didn't bet on Frivola, I don't think, but I just think that's wild. First of all, and I mean, the guy got taken down twice by Matt Frivola. Like, I mean, I know Matt Frivola's got, you know, he's a former wrestler, but come on, you know, like how good could this guy Saint Denis grappling be? I'm going to marry Caitlin Chookagian. Underdog, dude. I have to, dude. Underdog. I'm staying on the Barber Faye train. I have to stay on it. Chookagian Northeast stand up. And regretfully, I am going to have to kill Pedro Munhoz just because I just feel that out of those, just I love him as well, but you know, is what it is. Okay.
The thing for him though is he also can't be killed. Munhoz can't be killed. So he
cannot be
and
killed.
And then also, real quick, do you think jiu-jitsu, you versus Caitlin Chookagian's husband, who do you think would win?
I mean, jiu-jitsu, dude. Like, I mean, he's not submitting me, so
you're starting on the feet.
I mean, I'm not taking him down, so we're gonna have to figure that out somehow. But yeah, I might have the opportunity to train with him sometime soon. He teaches wrestling out at Vanguard in Long Island, so supposed to make it out there sometime soon. So should be good training. He's good. He is an incredibly legit wrestler and grappler and all those kinds of things. So a lot of respect for those guys out there, Jason Rao and all those other guys. So coming back at you, Martian. So I'm going to give you three, not necessarily sides that you're on, but three, okay? So you're going to get Jalta and Almeida at a pick'em price. You're going to get Michael O at plus 125. And then lastly, I'm going to give you a little bit higher up on the card. Second. Sorry. Damn, what the hell is wrong with my screen? And Gilbert Burns, plus 140.
Mm.
FMK. Michael O, Gilbert Burns, and what was the other one I told you?
Almeida.
Almeida, yes.
Okay, I will marry McCall. Gotta marry McCall. I'll fuck Gilbert. Afro's looking great this week. And I gotta kill Almeida because I am on the Blade's side. I'm on the Blade. I am on the Blade. You ever spend any time on the Blade?
Oh yeah, I forgot that you're on the Blade. My bad. I knew you are a Blade, but I forgot.
Yeah, I got some hoes out there working. But all right, that'll do it. Long pod this week, but a lot of good fights, a lot of discussion.
I think it's my favorite fight card in at least 2 years. At least.
It's a good one. It is a great one, top to bottom. We'll be looking forward to this one. Hope you all, got some good information from the podcast. Good to have Ozzy back this week. Got a couple of fight nights in a row before the big UFC 300 card coming up. And that'll do it. So hope you all have a good weekend, win some bets, and enjoy the fights. We will see you all next week. Peace out, everyone.